an opportunity to meet with Zichud. I presume, though, that probably covered most of the major issues. So I wanted to touch on something that might not have been part of the traditional curriculum, and that is Yichud with regards to adopted children, or more common in our context, is Yichud with regards to stepchildren or step-grandchildren, which is something that comes up more often than one might think. You know, just despite the best efforts of Disney to vilify all step-mothers and step-fathers, the truth of the matter is, oftentimes a step-parent enters into the scene in response to a tragedy or some difficult circumstances confronting the family. So it really is an opportunity to do tremendous chesed and to be a part of great healing within a family when one is confronted with the situation of a step-parent or even a step-grandparent. And certainly the Pasuk tells in Parashas Bamidbar, it's mentioned over here by the Gemara Masechet the Sanhedrin, the Testament base, that the Eagle told us Aaron and Moshe, described Aaron's children as the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. Even though they were only Aaron's biological children, they're described as descendants of Moshe. And the Gemara explains, Lo Malacha, that because, called Muhammad, has been Chaver Torah, Malah, because of Kilu Yolada. Anybody who teaches his friend's son Torah is considered as if he gave birth to him. And one might have thought that spiritual parent, one who teaches someone else's son Torah, as if he gave birth to him, is still secondary to the biological parent. However, the Meir Nesivim, who's a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, writes Pshat in the Gemara, that Ma'aleh Levakosuv, the Torah elevates him above even the biological parent. The spiritual parent has more chashivos in the eyes of the Torah, even more than the biological parent. He's raised above the biological parent. And this is reflected and supported by the Gemara Masechet Bava Metzia, which tells us that if a person has an opportunity to return a lost object that belongs to his father, or you know, he's confronted with a dilemma, he has his father's lost object or his Rebbe's lost object, so he's supposed to return the lost object of his Rebbe before that of his father. And the Gemara explains, Sha'aviv Heviyo Goyal Mazeh, his biological father brought him into this world, but Barabo Shalim Dachachman Beviyo Chayel Mabo, his father who taught him Torah, the Rebbe who taught him Torah, brings him not to Alamazah, but even to Alamabah. I remember once in Rav Shechter's shir, you know, in the Beis Medrash, there's no opportunity really to meet the parents. There's no PTA. Maybe we should have PTA, but there's no real opportunity to meet the parents. So I remember once there was a parent of one of the Talmidim who came to meet Rav Shechter after the shir. So he explained to Rav Shechter before he went over to him, he said, you know, I just wanted the opportunity to meet you because my son told me that if you're drowning and I'm drowning, he's going to save you before me. So I said, I thought if your life is going to get saved before mine, we should at least meet once, you know. I want to know who I'm giving up my life for. But anyway, the Gemara says if you have this dilemma, Savedas Rabos Kodemes Lavedas Ofik, because the spiritual parent even takes precedence over the biological parent, Malal of Akos of Kilu Yalavi. And it's not only perhaps that a person who teaches someone else's son Torah or helps raise them is considered a spiritual parent, but it might even become a partial partner as a physical parent. The Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin derives this same principle, ostensibly, from a different pasuk. The first Gemara was on New Testament base. The second Gemara is on Sadi Testament base, where Yesh Lakish says, "Kol Malamed is ben Chaveru Torah, Ma'ala Levakazav Hilu Aso." Anybody who teaches his friend son Torah, the Torah considers it as if he created him. And here the Torah quotes from the Gemara quotes from the Pasuk in Parashas Lech Lecha that when Avraham Avinu descended to Israel, he descended not only with himself and his and Lot and with his wife, but he went down also with the souls that he made in Haran, which of course is the people he brought closer to Torah and Mitzvahs. So you see that the Torah tells us that it's as if he created them. So someone who teaches someone else Torah is as if he created him. Isn't this redundant? Isn't that what the Gemara just told us earlier in the Testament base, based on a different pasuk in Parashas Bamidbar, where the Torah describes Aaron's children as Moshe Rabbeinu's children as well, since he taught them Torah? So Meir Tzvi Bergman, who's the son-in-law of Rav Shach, explains in the Sefer Sharia Aaron Chumash in Parashas Bamidbar that Reish Lakish is teaching us a new dimension here. That a person who teaches his friend some Torah is not only considered to be his spiritual parent, but considered even to be Ki'ilu Aso. He's a partner in the physical creation of the child as well. It's considered to be a partial physical parent as well. Perhaps this supports comment of the inference of a Ramban in Parashas Pinchas, 2 weeks, you have to store it for another week. But the Pasuk tells in Parashas Pinchas that within the Shevet of Asher, one of those people received the inheritance was the daughter of Asher, whose name was Sarach. The Shem Bas Asher, Sarach. The problem is Asher had sons. because we know if there are sons, so then daughters don't inherit. So how did Asher's daughter inherit, share in Eretz Yisrael, when there were sons present? So Ramban says, because it wasn't Asher's daughter, v'shem bas Asher Sarah. That's why it doesn't say Asher, bas Asher Sarah. It says the name of Asher's daughter was Sarah. Very circuitous way of describing her. So Ramban says, because it wasn't his daughter biologically. It was his wife who had a previous marriage. It was her daughter from that previous marriage, and the daughter, Sarah, was inheriting not a part of Shevet Asher, but part of a different Shevet, because her biological father had no sons. So she was inheriting her biological father as part of a different Shevet, but yes, she described as Bas Asher, because Asher was the one who raised her. And since Asher was the one who raised her, brought her close to the Torah, taught her Torah, he's considered to be not only a spiritual parent, but he's described by the Torah as her parent, her primary parent, is Asher. This has an afkamina lomaisa, where Moshe writes in the Gris Moshe that if you write in the get or the ksuba, not the parent's name, of course the parent's name is called for in different places in the ksuba and the get. If you write not the biological parent's name, but an adopted parent's name or a step parent's name, that's the one who raised the child and the child feels closest to that person. So whether ideally that should be done is a different story, but Rav Moshe says if it was done in a get or a ksuba, it's kosher. And he bases himself on the Torah here in Parashas Pinchas, which describes Sarah as the daughter of Asher, even though she was not the daughter of Asher, according to the Ramban. It was his stepdaughter. And nonetheless, since he raised her, it's considered to be his child. So Saltu and Iksuba or Get, you can write it. Ramesha says, really, you should write Hamagadloi. You should write, this is the son of the parent who raised him. So we have an indication it's not the biological parent, but if you left that out, says Ramesha, it would be kosher. So a person who teaches his friend's son Torah, certainly an adopted child, even a stepchild Torah, or raises the child, supports him, sustains him emotionally, can certainly be considered a spiritual parent, maybe even a partner in the physical, of parenting of the child. And this is because the main mitzvah, Puravu, is not focused really on creating biological children, but really in passing the Mesorah on to the next generation. Yeah, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Yevamos, that if a person who a guy had children while he was a guy, Vinis Geyer, and he converted. So Reish Lakish's opinion is once he converted, he has not fulfilled Puravu. A guy has no mitzvah Puravu, but once he converts, the convert can fulfill the mitzvah Puravu with his children that he had beforehand. Why? So Reish Lakish tells us a familiar principle, Gersh and his guy, because once he converts, is no longer considered related. His previous relatives, he's like a newborn child. Familiar halacha. Gersh and his guy, kakotan shenoy adam. Rabbi Yochanan, which is the way we paskin, holds that a guy who has children when he's a big guy, and then he converts, does fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu with those children. And we paskin that way. Rabbi Yochanan, I'm a key in Puravu. How can he fulfill Puravu? What happened to Gersh and his guy, kakotan shenoy adam? I mean, that's a universally accepted principle. So perhaps that's why the Rambam adds here something which does not appear in the Gemara. Over here, Isaiah, the Rambam parak, as well, facetious, adds, Hai lo banim b'gayuso, v'nizgayer hu v'heim. He converted, and they converted too. Yeah, but biologically, so they're Jewish children, okay. But biologically, they're not related to him. Because Gersh and his guy could cut the chenoy with them. So the children are related to the parents are not related to the children. How is he in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Puravu? So we can, perhaps we're forced to say, that the mitzvah Puravu is not defined by having biological children, because these are not considered to be his relatives, but rather by passing on the Mesorah to the next generation. And since this this Ger is going to pass on the Mesorah to his children, to these individuals, it's considered to be his spiritual children, and therefore he's considered to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Puravu. In fact, when Parshas Chayesara, right, after Avram Avinu is getting on in age, Avram Zakein Boba Yamim, because it says, Vashem Beirach is Avram Bakol. Hashem blessed Avram Avinu with Bakol. Everybody knows what's Bakol? Bakol means, well, one shot in the Medrash is it's a daughter whose name was Bakol. But Rashi doesn't subscribe to that position. Rashi says Bakol is Gematria 52, the same Gematria as Ben. He was blessed with a son. Who's the son Avram Avinu was blessed with? Yitzchak. The problem is, we just got through talking about Yitzchak, careful parashas by Yeru. It was about a Akedah Yitzchak. So I mean, Hashem blessed him now with a child. I mean, understand, he's still happy that he has a son, but that happened a long time ago. Why is it only mentioned here? So says Rav Moshe and the Drash Moshe, that is because this is after Akedos Yitzchak. See, in Parshas Vayera, before Akedos Yitzchak, Yitzchak was Avram Avinu's biological child, but he wasn't his spiritual heir. It was only after Akedas Yitzchak that Yitzchak verified, he demonstrated that he was not only Avraham Avinu's biological child, but his spiritual child as well. Now Avraham Avinu was blessed with a second dimension, a second aspect to his relationship with Yitzchak. He was not only his biological child, but in fact he was his spiritual child as well. He had passed on the Messiah successfully to the next generation. That's what the beginning of Parshas told us. The Pasuk says, Ve'ego told us, Yitzchak ben Avram. This is the descendants of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram halidas Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, which of course is redundant. So Rashi says on Chumash, why does it say this? That Ego told us Yitzchak ben Avram. Avram halidas Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak because to teach us Yitzchak looked like Avram. Everyone knew he was his child. No one should suspect that Sarah became pregnant with another, you know, from another man. However, perhaps we could suggest it says it twice because they had this dual relationship. Yitzchak was not only first the biological child of Avram Avinu, Eil told us Yitzchak ben Avram, but Avram halidas Yitzchak. Avram renewed his role as the parent of Yitzchak, not only as a biological parent, but perhaps as a spiritual parent as well. So therefore, writes the Noyed of Yehuda in his drashas in the Avas Tzion, but it's not just the drasha. The Shlomo Kluger writes in his comments on Evin HaEzer too, Simen Aleph, in Hilchas Peruvu, that if a person teaches someone else's child Torah, he's in fulfillment of the mitzvah, Peruvu. He's not his biological child, but he's passed on the mitzvah to the next generation. It's really the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Peruvu, not to have introduce new people to the world, but really to pass on the mitzvah. So he claims that that's the pshat in the Gemara Masechtas Yevamos. Gemara says that one of the Tanoim, Ben Azai, never married, and therefore never had children. So the other Tanoim criticized Ben Azai. They said, you're Noah Dorish, Ven Noah Makayim. You give great shiurim about Purvu, but when it comes time to doing it, you don't do anything. So they criticized him of being Echa B'Peh V'Echa B'Leiv. So Ben Azai said, what do you want from me? Nafshi Chashke B'Torah. And I desire to learn Torah. What are you asking from me? I want to learn. I can't pull myself away from learning. What kind of answer is that? Yeah, but you have a mitzvah to do, so pull yourself away. What do you mean, nafshi chashka b'Torah? So maybe who to suggest perhaps one explanation of what that very cryptic comment means is what he was explaining is that I am in fulfillment of Peruvu. How am I in fulfillment of Peruvu? Yes, not by having biological children, but perhaps by passing on Masorah to the next generation, teaching Torah to others. He was in fulfillment of the mitzvah Peruvu by having spiritual children. That's also fulfillment of the mitzvah Peruvu. That explains why I always wondered about this until I saw this comment. But what happens? Rachel can't have any children. Right in Parshas Vayetze. She's upset. She's distraught. So what does she do in the end? There's no other option. She gives Bilhah, her maidservant, to Yaakov Avinu. You know, and he'll have children. He'll somehow be associated with Rachel. How was she, you know, relieved or consoled by the fact that Bilhah, her maidservant, had children with her husband? If anything, it would be more disturbing, right? So, what was the consolation here? And then even after Leah's Omdu Miledes, after Yehuda, she gives her Zilpah to Yaakov. Why? What is the fulfillment here? So Meir Tzvi Bergman again explains in the Shari Yorah, this time on Parshas Vayetze. He says that it's because, of course, the maidservants were going to be the one who would be the biological mother of the child, but the child were not raised. They were not raised by Bilhah and Zilpah. That might be bothersome to some. But they were not raised by Bilhah and Zilpah. They were raised by Rachel and Leah. So even though Rachel said, I can't have my own biological children fulfill Peruvu in that way, she was going to fulfill Peruvu by raising the children of Bilhah, of her maidservant. And that was a consolation, because she'd be in fulfillment of the mitzvah Peruvu, even if not by having her own biological children, but by having spiritual children and raising children who might not have been her biological children, but passing on the Masorah to the next generation in that fashion. So a person who raises stepchildren or adopted children, more common in that time, stepchildren, so then he's in fulfillment of the mitzvah. If he raised them from a young age, and he's integral in the emotional development of the child, certainly the spiritual development of the child, could in fact be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Peruvu. That's why it seems that the child then would probably have an obligation even of kibud aviyim towards the step-parent, even though they're not biologically related. Because Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe that even a ger, who's not related to his biological parents anymore, once he converts, gershon is ger katan shenayel adami, and the truth of the matter is he wasn't related when he was a goy either. Because the Gemara says in Masechtas Yevamos, there's no relationship between a goy and his child, the male goy and his child, as the pasuk says, zir masusim, zir masam, in Sefer Yecheskel. So they're not related. Nonetheless, the goy, and later the ger, is chayv in kibud aviyem. So Moshe says, why are they chayv in kibud aviyem? And moreover, it's not one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach. Not only they're not related, it's not one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach kibud aviyem. In fact, we have the famous Gemara Maseches Kiddushin. The Gemara derives kibud aviyem, the extent of kibud aviyem, from Dama ben Nesina, who wouldn't wake up his father, right, in order to sell the precious stone to the Talmid Chacham of the generation that they needed for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. And the Gemara says he was rewarded handsomely. And the Gemara says, that's someone, she'enu mitzvah v'yoyis, is not obligated in the mitzvah of kibud aviyem. And he gets rewarded in this fashion, alachas kama v'kama, Kal Yisrael, who is obligated in kibud aviyem. So it's clear that B'nai Noach are not obligated in kibud aviyem, yet the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisurei Bia that a guy is chayv in kibud aviyem of his parent, even though, again, they're not related, and it's not when the Shavim is B'nai Noach, and even when the ger converts, he's chayv in kibud aviyem. So Ramosha deduces, the Nigros Moshe, that there must be a second dynamic, second aspect of kibud aviyem that's not even focused on the biological relationship that exists, but simply because of hakaras hatoiv. When someone does something for you, so the expectation of both Jews, we see this is such a basic principle of hakaras hatoiv, it's not only by Jews, it extends to B'nai Noach as well, says Rav Moshe, is an expectation of being a human being that a person will show gratitude to someone who did you a toiva. So Rav Moshe says that's why the goy is chayv and kibud aviyem, and the ger also, once he converts, is chayv and kibud aviyem. So too, we could probably extend that a step child who's raised by a step parent. Presumably, you know, is not only considered to be the spiritual child, perhaps, of the step-parent, if they raise them spiritually and emotionally, maybe even a physical parent, you know, but perhaps even kibud aviyem would apply as well. Even if the step, by the way, it's parenthetical, even if the step-parent did not raise the child, it might be an obligation of kibud aviyem. Because the Gemara says in Masechtas Ksubos, commenting on the Pasuk in Parashas Yisro and Aseres HaDibros, Kabeid es avicha ve'es imecha. You should honor your father and your mother. But the Gemara asks, why does it say kabed es avicha ve es imecha? The word ve es twice. The ve es comes to include es avicha, es esha savicha, your father's wife, even if it's not your mother. And es imecha, the rabbos balos imecha, your mother's husband, even if it's not your father. So there's an obligation of kibud aviyem on step parents as well. It's interesting though, and this comes up lemaisa. Hopefully we'll keep this between us. But the Chassam Sofer writes in his comments on Parashas Kedoshim, we find no such drasha by Ishimo v'aviv tiro, by fearing your parents. There's no such inclusion of a step-parent. It's only by kibud aviyem. Then a step-parent is included. So the Chassam Sofer says perhaps kibud aviyem extends to a step-parent, but not fearing one's parent. So therefore the Chassam Sofer says, it'll be a chapanaf kamina l'maisa, because you know, as part of an obligation of kibud aviyem, you have to service the parents, you have to service the step-parent. But one of the obligations of yira, of fearing your parents, is not to sit in their place, not to contradict them, and not to call them by their first name. So some Sefer says, from the fact we only find the drasha by kibud aviyem, we don't find the ve'ishimo v'aviv tiro, perhaps even though one is obligated in kibud aviyem to a step-parent, perhaps not calling them by their first name would not apply. Perhaps there's no iser. Iser to call your parent by the first name, but not necessarily a step-parent. Ishimo v'aviv tiro might not extend to step-parents. Others disagree. That's the Chassam Sofer says, though. Later, Achrayim disagree. Probably never saw the comment of the Chassam Sofer. But they disagree, and they say, kibud aviyem and ishimo v'aviv tiro always go lockstep. They always go together. Kibud and yira. So if kibud extends to a step-parent, then yira should extend to a step-parent, too. And I always think it's an eitz ha-toiva. You know, you don't have to show how such a lamdan you are by calling a step parent by the first name. We can all fargin a little bit and call them by whatever name they would like to be called. Particularly because the reason you have to be mechabed a step parent is as an expression of cover to your real parent. I have to be mechabed my mother because of and in doing so I have to be mechabed her husband, mechabed the father, and in doing so I have to be mechabed his wife. That's why I said in Shulchan Aruch, the chiyuv really only extends while the parent is alive. Because it's really my obligation to the step-parent is an expression of kibud aviyem to the biological parent. So it extends only while they're alive. But if they did stuff for you, so then you have an independent obligation of kibud aviyem, because of, as Rav Moshe told us, as an expression of hakaras hatoiv. Okay, so a step-parent might even be, if he was integral in raising the child spiritually and emotionally, certainly has the status, might have even fulfilled purvu by doing so, and would have the status of a parent, maybe certainly spiritually, but maybe even, as we said, a physical parent, if not an absolute biological parent. But what should be the status with regards to yichud, or the interactions between the stepchild and the parent, is something that's a very sensitive issue. So the Gemara says in Masechtas Kiddushin over here that one is allowed to be mesiached with a mother or a daughter, as opposed to all of the other arayos in the Torah. This is based on the pasuk in Parashas Ki Seitzi, Ki Yisischa Achicha Ben Imecha, when your brother, the son of your mother, Obitcha, Ovincha, Obitcha, Oeshes Chaykecha, Asher Kenavshecha B'Seis Aleimar, they'll encourage you in private to worship Avodah Zarah. So who are you alone in private with? You're alone in private with your wife, or your daughter, or your son, or your brother from your mother's side. Why are you alone with these people in private? Because you're allowed to be mesiached. You derive from here the inference. A person is allowed to be mesiached with his mother and with his daughter, even though they're one of the arayos, is forbidden to be mesiached with them. But the Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin, even though the Gemara quotes a machlokes about this, concludes one is allowed to be mesiached not only with a mother and a daughter, one is allowed to be mesiached with his sister too. That was actually a machlokes hatanoim there. Some tanoim disagreed. There were some tanoim, though, who were even so machmir that not to be mesiached with their daughter, not even with a farm animal. The Gemara goes so far as to say. And the Rush says about this, ha machmir tavo alav bracha. Even though there's no formal issa yichud, it's an interesting thing. One should not be mesiached with a farm animal, with another man, anybody. A person should not be mesiached. In fact, in the Nite Gavriel, that's where Gavriel Tzinner has many interesting halachas, but he also calls sometimes things you don't find elsewhere. So he says, that's why, in Halchas Yichud, that's why the minhag in yeshivas always was to put three boys in a dorm room, never two. You shouldn't have yichud, a machmer tovu or bracha, not to be mesiached with anybody, to exclude any possibility of impropriety. But in the end of the day, we paskin, one's allowed to be mesiached with his mother, with his daughter, even with his sister. But the sister is not mentioned in the pasuk. The pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, Ki yisischa achicha ben imecha, bincha, bitecha, eishes chaykecha, says if a person will be alone with his brother from the mother's side, because he can be together with his mother, or with his daughter in private, they'll lead you astray saying, go worship Avodah Zarah. But it never mentions the sister. So Rashi there explains, why is one allowed to be mesiached with his sister? Because there's no Yetzirah for a sister, because the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin that once the Anshei Knesset HaGadol gathered together and davened to the Ribono Shel Olam to remove the Yetzirah for Arayos. Our tefillah was answered, but then Chazal saw people weren't procreating because the Yetzirah had been removed, so they asked to have it restored, but not restored vis-a-vis Arayos. So we have the Yetzirah with regards to other women, but Arayos, people are relatives, Arayos of Eishes Ish continue to have a Yetzirah, but Arayos or Nida, but Arayos of relatives, that the Yetzirah was removed. So there's no Yetzirah anymore for a sister, so that's why a person got to be mesiached with his sister. How did they have the right to remove an Iser Yichud that existed? Prior to that, there was an Iser Yichud with your sister, because it was a Yetzirah. Afterwards, there was no Yetzirah, so all of a sudden the Iser Yichud disappeared, so the Tosfos HaRosh there explains, no, the mother and daughter, there was never Yetzirah. That's a biological axiom. There's no Yetzirah for a mother and a daughter. But Chazal, what they did by removing the Yetzirah for a sister, that put it back into the category of mother and daughter, so expanded the category of mother and daughter, which existed beforehand, not only to mother and daughter, but to sisters as well. So since there's no Yetzirah to sisters, one is allowed to be mesiached, not only with his mother, with the daughter, but with a sister as well, or any other blood relative. This wouldn't extend to a relative through marriage, but any other blood relative. So then there would be no Yetzirah, but biological relative, there'd be no Yetzirah, there'd be a Heter Yichud. So because of this, writes Dain Weiss in the Minchas Yitzchak, as well as the Lubavitcher Rebbe, has in the Tshuva in the back of the Oitzer HaPoiskim, which is a collection of Shaul's and Tshuvas on Eben HaEzer. So he was involved in the printing of the Oitzer HaPoiskim at the very beginning. So in the back of one of the early volumes of the Oitzer HaPoiskim, in Simu Chaf Aleph, I think where all Pilchas Yichud appears, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe is a tshuva about this too, that one is not allowed to be mesiached with an adopted child or a stepchild because there is a Yetzirah. From biological relatives, the Yetzirah was removed, but it wasn't removed from these individuals, and therefore the Issur Yichud would persist. Rav Moshe, though, in the Igros Moshe asks, he says, but look over here at this Gemara Masechta Saita. The Gemara says in Masechta Saita that stepchildren, the Gemara has a Havamina, stepchildren are not allowed, step siblings are not allowed to marry one another. A stepdaughter is not allowed, a stepsister is not allowed to marry one of her stepbrothers. There's going to be a marriage sign. People think it's your brother. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. They are allowed to get married. Everyone's going to know that this is a stepchild. In fact, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Afches, the Rav's parents, I think, were step brother and sister. It's permitted. Some Cypher says there's still a Marasan if they have the last name. They both share the same last name, you know, whatever it is. So then it's icky. It's still a Marasan. But if they don't share the same last name, so some Cypher says, we should pass like the Gemara, that it's Mutter. So Frank to Ramesha. Ramesha asks, 1 minute. If there's no Heter Yichud with a stepchild, So then, how could the Gemara even have a Havamina there's a Marasayan here? The father's never going to be Misyakud with this girl. Everyone's going to see that they're not Misyakud with another. Of course, there's no Marasayan. What could possibly be the suspicion? Why did the Gemara have to say, nah, you know what, people will find out. Of course, if they're not being Misyakud with another, it's obvious they're screaming this or publicizing to the whole community that they're not related to one another. How could there even be a Havamina of a Marasayan? So it must be, says Ramesha, he was treating her like his daughter, and they were being Misyakud together. How could he be misyachid with her? But it's not his biological descendant. There is a Yetzara. So Ramesha says it must be that since his wife will be around, and a wife will always talk to the daughter, she's in the house, say, you know, did the father do anything inappropriate? She'll find out if something happened. So since his wife is always checking up on him, or vice versa, if it's a son, the husband will always be checking up, you know, asking the son if anything inappropriate occurred together with the mother. So since there's someone always around, not really like Ishto Mishamarto or Baal Abair, but even more than that, they're together all the time in the house, so then it will come out if something inappropriate happened, and that itself will be a deterrent to make sure nothing happens. So Ramesha says, as long as there's a spouse in the house, you know, even if it doesn't fit into the other formal categories of yichud, then it's permitted for the step-parent to be alone with the stepchild or the adopted parent together with the adopted child, because the other parent is not going to want anything inappropriate to occur, and they'll find out about it even if they weren't around at the time. However, Moshe says there would be a problem after the parent passes. If one of the parent passes away, you know, then the Isser Yichud would return. But as long as the other parent is around, or Moshe claims would be a Heter Yichud. He says, well, let's read inside here. Oysu Gimel, the second line after the comma, he says, "Bitzarach Loma, the Yarmi Yisho Shadechoy Shadtoy." She'll be suspicious of him. They're going to ask about her biological daughter. You know, did the stepdad do anything inappropriate, or the adopted daughter? And after this, you know, did the other parent do anything appropriate? It's only if one of the parents passes away, then it's a problem. Yeah.
Does the Rosh say that more for somebody that came into the family when they were older, as opposed to someone? Let's say you got married already.
No, Ramesha is saying that this would apply at any point.
So he never thinks that you can get into that category of no Yitzhar, regardless.
Yeah, no. The Tzitz Eliezer, and I'm quoting the name of Salvechik also, that they felt that if the child came into the family at a very young age, so then there would be no Issa Yichud in the first place. Because Rashi there writes, look back at Ois Yud, and Rashi writes, why is one allowed to be Misyached? Back in Ois Tes, why is one allowed to be Misyached with his mother? So Rashi says, Shahaben, the brackets are always test, Shahaben Matsui Eitzel Ha'em, because the son is always found with the mother. So if you turn the page, you look in the Levush seems to imply that it's because they're always together, you know, kind of like a familiarity reduces the Yetzira. So look at the Levush at the end of the first line, Koma Shahaben Matsui Tamid in Imo. Because they're always together. So the Tzitz Eliezer derives from this comment of Lulavush that anybody who's always together with the stepchild or always together with the adopted child, there's no Yetzaras, particularly if they came into the family at a very young age. I don't think this would apply to an older age, but at a very young age, there'd be no Isser of Yichud. Moreover, the Tzitz Eliezer quotes over here the Piskei Arush, which asks the question all the Rishonim struggle with, why is a husband allowed to be Misyachim with his wife when she's a Nida? Anita is ostensibly one of the Arayos. How can it be Misyachid with her? So Taisa says in Sanhedrin that it's not similar to the mother because she'll be permitted later. Or the other Rishonim answer is Paspasalo. He's been together with his wife before, says the reduced Yetzera. The Piskei Arush says something astounding. He says the reason that it's permitted is because it's too difficult to avoid. He says, El Shadavar Kosh, in the middle of the second line, Kosh Elizar, Miyichud Ishto Nido, it's too difficult. So we permitted it. It's just always around. We can't live with an Iser like that. So the Tzitz Eliezer says over here too, we have a stepchild in the house or an adopted child. It's just impossible to negotiate life if you're going to be chayish for the Iser Yichud constantly. So therefore, Tzitz Eliezer says perhaps we could apply that to this setting as well. But we could add, you know, based on what we said already, anybody who raises a child, I'll get to your point in one second, anybody who raises a child and spiritually and emotionally is malo v'kasev kilu yalado, and we saw it's not only with regards to spiritual parenting of the child, but even with regards to kilu aso, it's as if he made them a physical parent of the child, and is even in fulfillment of the mitzvah purvu, so perhaps one could apply that to this setting as well, that that is considered to be your child, and therefore you're not going to want anything detrimental to happen to the child. You wouldn't scar the child in that fashion, yeah.
Is this working with Moshe as well? Because if, just if it's Gerush, they use a
pasuk. No, he's working with the fact that if you're always together, there's a reduced Yetzirah.
Even though they
need a pasuk. Ramesha never said that. Ramesha said, because your wife's going to check up on
right.
you. That's a whole different story.
Because
this
Gerush is using a
pasuk,
they have a pasuk
there from that. Yeah. Suga Bashoshanim. So I would assume many interpret Suga Bashoshanim means that you're always together, that, you know, it's pas basalo. I'll be able to come, I've been with my wife before, I'll be with her again. This is a reduced Yetzirah. He's saying, no, what that means is that since I live with this constantly, you just can't impose this kind of, you know, this kind of onerous obligation. It's just too much.
So how would you define the age? Like,
I don't know. I think it would depend probably on the emotional maturity of the child. Does the child know you as your only parent and that kind of stuff? Have you been together with the child from a very young age? I don't know. But even Ramosha, again, who really is machmir, but practically says if your spouse is there to check up on you, then it's permitted. Even look back at Ramosha, he said, Gimel, Ramosha says that even though he's machmir and yichud, chibuk v'nishuk, ironically, Ramosha is more lenient on to hug and to kiss the stepchild. Again, they came into the marriage at a young age, not a, you know, because he becomes a step-parent of a 30-year-old child. But they came to the child, into the family at a young age. This is the only parent or grandparent the child ever knew. He never even knew that this is not his biological grandparent or parent, until later age. This is the parent he grew up with. So then Ramesha claims that perhaps Chibuk and Nishuk is easier to be matir. And why is that? Because the Pasuk says in Parashas Achrei Moses, Sikravu legalis erva, you're not supposed to come close to revealing an erva. That not only is formal relations prohibited, but chibuk v'nishuk, hugging and kissing, is also prohibited. However, the Rambam, even though he believes that this is a prohibition midoraisa over here at Yitzayin, the Rambam says it's only prohibited if it's derech taiva. Kol haba erva min arayas derech ibama shechibuk v'nishuk derech taiva, if it's in a lustful, passionate fashion, then it's prohibited. Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva notably does not have such a qualification. Rabbeinu Yonah prohibits it entirely, but the Rambam assumed it was only prohibited if it was derech taiva, if it was lustful, in a lustful fashion. Not even if it's affectionate, that's not the same as lustful or passionate. That's more than that, and therefore, according to the Rambam, anything that's not lustful would not be an iser midoraisa. The Shulchan Aruch, interestingly enough, passes like Rabbeinu Yonah, that if you have a woman who's sick, her husband cannot take care of her, even though she's in danger, because he's not allowed to touch her. The Shulchan Aruch passes in Hilchos Nida, he's not allowed to touch her, and even though she's in danger, and he doesn't mean to do so in an affectionate fashion even, it's only in a medical fashion, it's still prohibited. All kinds of physical contact between the arayos are prohibited. It might even be implied from the Shulchan Aruch, Yaharig Val Yavor, just like Gilui Arayos is the Yaharig Val Yavor, even a derivative of Gilui Arayos. Abizrayo of Gilui Arayos. So Sikavu Legalos Erva would also be Yaharig Val Yavor. That's like Rabbeinu Yonah. But the Shach over there, and some Kuf Tzadi Heis, if you have a hero, you see Tess, Paskins like the Rambam, that the only time it's prohibited to physical contact, Midoy Raisa, the only time it's prohibited is if it's Derech Taiva, V'chibas Bia. If it's in a desirous or lustful fashion, with chibas bia, which is not just affectionate, leading up, something that will lead up to bia, then it's prohibited midaraisa. And most achrayim, Rav Moshe, many others, passing like the Shach, this is the basis for any male doctor who treats a female patient, is because we assume, like the Rambam, that the only time it's prohibited to have physical contact between arayos is if it's derech taiva v'chibas bia, a lustful, desirous fashion. Other than that, it's permitted. The Shach even continues and he says even affectionate is okay, because the Shach says that is it here? Maybe I cut out that part of the Shach. The Shach says people used to kiss their daughters, their mothers. All of those things were permitted, even though it's an affectionate kissing. So that was permitted. Affectionate is very different than lustful. And therefore, you know, a female patient is allowed to be treated by a male doctor. Or Ramosha writes in Igros Moshe, a person's on a subway and it's hard to negotiate without bumping into someone of the opposite sex. So Ramosha says, you know, that's you're on an airplane and there's inadvertent or unintentional brushing, you know, of someone next to you. Ramosha claims that that's permitted. It's not their type of achivas bia, and therefore it can be allowed. It's not awesome in Deiraisa. It doesn't mean gratuitously this should be done. A guy's traveling on the subway, he's on the airplane, it's unavoidable. If it's gratuitous, you know, there's no reason for it. So then, many Paiskim assume it's Techem, and many others quoted by the Otzar Paiskim assume it's still awesome in the Rabbanon. And I think, you know, this is my own addition, it's perhaps reflected in the Shulchan Aruch and Simchof Aleph, Sif Zion, the famous Sif. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mechabek Omenashik Achas Min Arayas, a person hugs and kisses one of the Arayas, but there's no Yetzer Hara. Like a sister, or like his aunt from his father's side, it's one of the arayos. The yetzer hara was removed. It's nonetheless alpha pisha elo shum hanoklal. Now the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say you can't touch them. Shulchan Aruch says person who hugs and kisses them alpha pisha elo shum. Maybe it includes touching. I don't know, but it says in Shulchan Aruch only hugging and kissing alpha pisha elo shum hanok. Even though it doesn't enjoy it at all, hareza meguna biyoser. This is highly inappropriate. B'davar isar, it's prohibited. If it's prohibited, why do you have to say it's Maguna? Okay, but he's piling on. Umay Satipshin, the way of fools. To do this, She'en Krovim La'er V'Klal, we don't come close to Arayos for any reason, you know, that's gratuitous. There's no reason for it. So if there's no reason for it, obviously it should not be done. But if there's a reason, like a person's taking the subway and it's simply unavoidable, so a person's going to a doctor to be treated. So then it's necessary. So then it can be permitted there as well.
You know, in a couple of situations, let's say you have somebody who grew up in a home and is used to hugging his aunt.
Yeah, yeah.
Or family. Then he gets older, he goes to yeshiva, he realizes that it's aser. Now he's got that sticky sensitivity because he comes home and then he has to all of a sudden he can't touch his aunt. And it becomes, I know it's a situation very comfortable. Again, they didn't understand, obviously.
Right, so they don't understand. You have to make a chur Hashem, but at the same time, I assume he has other hurdles to overcome also, aside from the end, that he's so different from his family. But yeah, 100%. So Ramosha claims, though, with a stepchild, here it's for a purpose. It's not gratuitous. It's there to be machazik the child. The child needs the emotional support of the parent. So Ramosha claims then, even though yichud can't be allowed, chibuk and nishuk perhaps can't be allowed. Dain Weiss in the Minchas Yitzchak says, no, there's no Heter Yichud, there's no Heter Yichud, there's no Heter Chibuk V'Nishuk either, and there are some who paskin like that, Lamaisa, that even if the stepchild didn't know any other parent, never knew any other grandparent, they shouldn't hug and kiss them. But there are many who paskin like Ramosha, David Cohen, I've heard personally, he said that the stepchild, if that's all they, the only parent they ever knew was this parent, the only grandparent they ever knew was that grandparent, so they'd be allowed to touch one another because that is l'tayelos. It's not gratuitous. It's there to be mechazik emotionally and spiritually to the child, that they should feel like they have a parent, they should feel like they have a grandparent. Is something that's really important. We'll just conclude. I promise the rabbi to finish, but this is too good. The Ramosha, right after the tshuva about the subway, Ramosha says, even though you're allowed to go on a subway, if it's inadvertent and unintentional, you bump into somebody. Ramosha says, but, you know, presumably then you could go to Manhattan, even though you're in this city, even though there are people dressed inappropriately. If you could bump into them on the subway, certainly you could go there and see things that are inappropriate. If you have no other, you shouldn't concentrate, of course, and you should try and look away, but and not pay attention to it. But what else are you going to do? It's inadvertent and unintentional. At the same time, Ramosha, in the very next tshuva, Ramosha says, if a person is deciding where to go on vacation, he is prohibited from going to a place where they dress inappropriately. Why? It's inadvertent and it's unavoidable. So I think he doesn't answer. But I think the yishuv is because I am in a greater. When I go to work, I'm not in control of my environment. So there's nothing I can do. When I'm planning a vacation, I have the ability to choose where to go. So it says Ramesh, when a person has more control over his environment, then we have to assert even a greater control over his environment. He shouldn't rely on the fact that it's unintentional and unavoidable. We have to perhaps assert ourselves to a greater degree and we should avoid things. Things that are inappropriate. You know, Pasuk says in Parshas Pinchas that in Parshas Kisetze that when you go to war, one of the things you should have with you is a yosed, is a peg. So the Gemara says the yosed tiocha ala zeinecha. You should have a yosed, a peg in your quiver, in your sack. But the Gemara says yosed tiocha al oznecha. you should take your fingers, which are shaped like pegs, and if you hear something that's inappropriate, you should stick it in your ear, so you shouldn't hear it. So in Parshas Pinchas, one of the children of God, I promise, last thing, one of the children of God is Ozni. Mishpachas Ha'ozni. So earlier in the Torah, when the families are counted, there is no Mishpachas Ha'ozni. I think Parshas Vayigash, there is no Mishpachas Ha'ozni, but there is a different family there. There's Etzbon, which we don't have here in Parshas Pinchas. So Rashi says he thinks Ozni is Etzbon, but he doesn't know why they were switched. That's what Rashi says. So the Ishbitzer writes in the Sefer Me'ashilach something fantastic. He says, no. The last time they were counted, they were going down to Mitzrayim at the end of Parshas Sefer Bereishis. So there, they were going to a hostile environment, so the name was Etzbon, because he had to take his fingers and put them in his ears. He took his fingers, put them in his ears. He had to avoid inappropriate things around him. Now, in Parshas Pinchas, they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, which is a wonderful oasis of spirituality. He could take his fingers out of his ears. Now the name was Ozni. Ears, it was no longer Etzbon. So even though there are some coolers in these areas, we have to, you know, when a person is in greater control of the environment, he should, of course. Yeah.